Hey everybody, Matt Sullivan here, Executive Director of LMC Media, and we have a very exciting episode of LMC Cast today. I say exciting for two reasons. Personally, I'm excited because this is my first time recording in our beautiful studio on the Avenue, located at Mamaroneck Cinemas, 243 Mamaroneck Avenue in Mamaroneck, New York. And second, I'm here with my good friend, Clay Bushong. Clay, it's so great to be here with you today, and thanks for joining us on the LMC Cast.
I'm absolutely honored to be your first guest, and your first guest. I know you guys have been doing the cast for a bit, and the studio is absolutely gorgeous. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Well, Clay, you are the executive director of the Picture House Regional Film Center. Yeah. You are a four-time Best of Westchester winner. Yeah. You were recognized by the Pelham Rotary Club in 2018 as their Person of the Year. And last but not least, you received a District 34 Hero Award. So you've certainly done your part in our communities and are just an all-around wonderful guy. So it's great to have you here today. Tell me a little bit about your position now at the Picture House.
So the Picture House Regional Film Center is started in Pelham about 20 years ago. The theater was going to get knocked down and turned into a bank. I know you've been there. It's a beautiful historic theater like the one we're in today. And so, you know, we can't lose these important anchor cultural centers of our towns in Westchester and across America. So some dedicated people got together, raised the funds, and bought it and turned it into a nonprofit. And we've been running that for about 20 years. About 3 years ago, the pandemic, we managed to take over the Bronxville Theater, which is now the Bronxville Picture House, and we leased that from the former, the Bow Tie that used to run it, also used to run this theater too.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They're divesting themselves of the theaters. And so now we have two locations, two theaters in Pelham and three in Bronxville.
Wow.
So we have five theaters between Pelham and Bronxville. And both of them are, you know, important to the communities.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, restaurants, everybody sees a huge uptick in business when we show films, and it's important.
And absolutely. I mean, we've seen it here in Mamaroneck when Mamaroneck Cinemas, or the Playhouse as it used to be called, was shuttered and boarded, and you didn't have the life and vibrancy in your downtown without your theater. I mean, you have so many people that are coming in and out, and you know, either going to dinner before a film or going out after.
Yeah.
You have, you know, students and senior citizens and everybody who's coming out. So incredible that you have not only sort of revitalized those communities, but you've kept community. This is essentially what you've done.
Yeah, it's so important. I mean, you know, we've talked film for years. You know how important it is to see a film with somebody else.
Yeah.
And nowadays, you know, with your phones and your streamings and stuff like that, you'll just watch it by yourself or with your spouse. There's nothing like going into the theater and seeing it with a bunch of people you don't know and then coming out and sometimes actually talking to them about the movie that you just saw, whether you liked it or not, and what you liked it, and did you share that same experience with them? And that's so important, especially
Absolutely.
For now,
Absolutely.
The way we are. So,
and tell me a little bit about, I mean, obviously we've hit some bumps over the years in sort of the film business and the theatrical showcasing of films, COVID obviously being one of them, and you guys had to really come up with some creative ways to kind of pivot your business model. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So right when COVID hit, you know, we had to shut the doors in March. We kept it open probably the longest we could to be responsible.
Right.
And then we were kind of like, what do we do from this point on? And we had this, about 6 years prior, we had started a film club with a person, a film critic named Marshall Fine. And so we managed to pivot and turn the film club to an online experience. And it actually turned out really well because what we found is the studios still had a lot of movies they wanted to release, and they released them streaming. And so first of all, our film club is you come in on a Wednesday night, you do not know what movie you're going to see, and you sit down, and it might be a documentary, it might be a scripted movie. You sit there and you watch it, and then afterwards we have a guest with a speaker doing a Q&A, something that had to do with the movie. The producer, actor, director comes out and talks about the movie. And so what we ended up having online is we had access to a lot of actors that had always wanted to do it, but they never, the schedules never And they had nothing to do either. Right, so right. We had like Patricia Clarkson, Paul Giamatti, a bunch of people came.
Big names.
And big names. And so our people, so we had about 200 people online, and they would ask questions and interact with the actors and directors after the film.
Very cool opportunity for your audience to do that and have access to those names. I'm sure in a way it was sort of a blessing and a curse, because it in some ways may have opened up the door to the concept of streaming and sort of watching at home, that viewing experience at home. And I know that's something that the business is struggling with now is how do we deal with streamers, and what are some of the ways that we can incentivize people to get them back into the seats at our theaters?
I mean, I think it is. I mean, we're blessed and cursed with being so close to New York City. So there's so many actors, directors, producers that can come out and make it more of an interactive experience. I think a lot of people did get sick of the streaming and the Zooms and stuff like that. So people really do not want to watch movies or conversations online now. Sadly, it used to be that the studio budgets would bring someone to New York. This is how we kind of came up with the idea. I was in the music industry for years, and I know publicists, and they always have to fill time with their when something's getting released. And so they would always bring an actor, director, multiple actors and directors to New York City to do, Colbert and David Letterman, all those night shows. And then they'd always have free time that we could be able to fill in, because we were only 25-minute car ride to midtown Manhattan. And so we'd had, but now the studios have cut back all that budget, and they don't not send people out like they used to. And they don't have the conversations like they used to. So we have had to rely on more previously released movies a lot of times too. And people who are producers. But sometimes those producers' questions are the most interesting. The conversations are usually the most interesting, because they have no pretenses. They're very excited about being there, and they really want to share how the movie was made from nuts to bolts. Yeah. And, we had this great movie about Jacques Cousteau, and I'm going to do a disservice because I forget the lady who was with it, but she basically gets hired by these documentaries to study the subject to 9 months of sitting in a library, Library of Congress, looking for every little detailed picture, a document that she can find. And she gets sent all over the world to, she's in Paris right now studying and doing the advance work for all these documentaries, which is just credible, and you hear her story and all the great documentaries that she worked with. And she's an unsung hero in the sense that nobody really knows who she is unless you're in the industry. And then she came and talked to 300 of our guests, and they loved it. They thought that, it opened up a whole new world of film.
That's great. Well, and that's what you guys do, and I think it's really nice to be able to have those conversations and make sure that even if you don't have to be someone who is a film critic or someone who has immersed themselves for years in film, you can just dive in and be sort of a newbie at any of this. But
And we've also been trying to get more. We've been dabbling in music. We have an annual concert called two annual concerts. One's called Music That Made the Movies, and it's right before the Oscars, and we have a bunch of local bands come in, and they choose a song, any song that had been nominated from the Oscars from the last 98 years.
Wow.
And then they play that song. We usually have 10, 15 people perform.
Very cool.
And then we also have Not So Silent Night, which is our holiday Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa concert.
And Nosferatu as well, right? Didn't you do something for
Halloween? Oh, I always love those. And everybody who comes to it, I had Nosferatu. Nosferatu was this amazing, this group from Austin, Texas, and they tour around the country, and they play the soundtrack to a black and white film that had audio soundtrack when it was released. I mean, back in the days, like the Picture House days, and here, they had an organ and before there was sound, and people would play music before the during the movie as the soundtrack.
And fun fact, the Picture House back in the day used to be, this was a stable, right, for horses, I believe?
It was always a movie theater.
Oh, it was, okay. Or maybe. A part of it was? I remember hearing something about
you could park your horse out back. I know that we have all these crazy, they had windows when we took down the, there were seven layers of velvet curtain, and we took them down, and the windows were still there because they used to have windows because everybody smoked during the movies.
We
have these skylight chimneys that would open up, and the smoke could get out and stuff like that.
Unbelievable.
Back in the good old days when you smoke cigarettes in a theater. I'm just joking.
it's a beautiful theater, and you guys did an amazing job renovating. Yeah. It's, I think, one of probably the few remaining single-screen theaters that are out there, which really, as a movie viewer myself, it just provides a different experience to have that be kind of the only thing. I know you have a smaller
screening room
that's off to the center of the mm-hmm. lobby, but to have that one big giant screen,
yeah.
you know, really provides a different experience when you go in to see those movies. Now, I want to talk a little bit about, you had mentioned your previous sort of music career, and this is going back when you started your career. I believe you were an agent at William Morris.
Junior agent.
And you were also then getting into marketing, working with bands.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about that sort of part of your career and how you got into that.
Yeah. So funny enough, where I went to college, University of Montana, I had met my wife in D.C., and she was from Montana, and we were both between colleges, and so we went out to University of Montana. And it happened to be a breeding ground for people to work at the William Morris Agency in Beverly Hills, because one guy left. It was, they would put the programming department, the students, in charge of everything. So you were in charge of bringing bands into the arenas and to the the cafes and stuff like that. But what was unique, that there was no local promoter who would really come in and do everything. They'd always, when they were going through from Seattle to Minnesota or something like that, you'd have these big bands, country bands and rock bands, Whitesnake and Scorpions, Garth Brooks, Vince Gill, and they'd put the students in charge. So we learned very quickly how to produce a whole concert.
Wow. That's really
and
cool.
And so, so I worked there, and then I think 8 or 9 people had worked there and then gone to Waymore. So then I moved to L.A. I hated L.A. I love visiting L.A., but I did not like living there. And so we moved to Nashville and then worked in the country business. I was the international department, so booking country music overseas. Wow. And then we moved to Boston.
And you moved to Boston. Then you end up at the Middle East on my street where I lived.
I ended up in the Middle East. I ended up running the Middle East nightclub, 3 live music venues. It was a crazy time in the 90s when all that music was incredible, and did the first Boston's Hometown Throwdown.
Very cool.
6 nights of Mighty Boston's, and you know, we had everybody play there, and it was incredible. Beck played there. It was a converted bowling alley we had downstairs and bar, and then we had the upstairs and
great spot
Elliot Smith
for live music, and it's still there now.
It is still there now, and the brothers still actually, just Nabil runs it now, the Middle Eastern brothers.
Very cool. And is this where you meet Aerosmith?
It is where I meet Aerosmith.
Tell us that story.
So they were going into the studio to record an album, and they wanted to try the songs out before they went to go record them. And they actually had their own nightclub on Lansdowne Street at the time, Mamakin.
Oh, wow. Didn't know that.
Yeah. And so they didn't want to just play there. They wanted to play somewhere and then play there the next night. And so it was a surprise gig, only 600 seats. Only 600 people were allowed in, and it was Aerosmith in Boston. And it went off fabulously well, and they had such a good time at the club that wasn't theirs, which was surprising, that they called me and said, did I want to come work for them and work.
What an opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you end up doing for them?
So I ended up doing all their touring, all their tour marketing, and then I did their first online stuff, their first website. I was back when bands were doing first websites, bands like Aerosmith. This I worked closely with Sony. So I was in charge of all the tour marketing, setting up all the tours, and and then running the website. Did the first ever, that wasn't the first ever. It was the biggest. We did a chat. They were in Japan on AOL, and we actually crashed the AOL service. This is back in the day when you could crash.
That was
service.
You. That was you, me. You're behind that.
We were the first one.
You
to
crashed
crash
the internet originally.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you would appreciate this. So I had this idea, this crazy. I always had more ideas and sense. But I did this webcast. It was the first webcast we did from stage, and each band member had their own camera on them. Steven had a mic on his camera, and Joey had a drum camera. And so all 5 of them were camered up. And
very
then,
cool.
And then we streamed that on AOL.
Amazing.
They still use the footage to this day.
Really?
Yeah.
So that is fun.
So yeah, so I worked for them for a bunch of years. They moved me to New York, and then, the fickle music industry,
yeah.
and and I also had a kid. And
then the pivot, managing then bands the pivot is, happens.
Yes, once you have those kids.
And yes, I know well.
Getting calls at 3 in the morning from rock stars gets old quickly you have
children. Instead, you're just getting calls from your two-year-old.
Well, that's the thing. I do always say, because you can't hang up on your two-year-old.
That's right.
So that's the one drawback. It's a harder job than managing bands, working with bands.
But, sometimes similar in many ways, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They were sober then, so I didn't have to clean up a lot of vomit. But,
So what happens then? You're going from the music industry, and then what?
So I started my own online marketing company when that was – so I had a lot of contacts in the music industry. And so – and like we said, the web was – you know, online music reviews were just starting to come out. Right. People are starting to have fan sites. And so I started my own online music company. And once I started, there was about 12 websites that reviewed music back then.
Wow.
I'm dating myself. I'm so old. and I had about 23 people that would review. And so the record company would send me the CDs in advance, and I'd send them to them to produce. And so, you know, so I'd send out 23 CDs to get reviewed, and they'd be happy if 6 websites got reviewed. And then by the time I shuttered the company, I think my mailing list was about 600 CDs, and it represented about 1200 different websites that would do reviews. So it was a big growth era. So, and during that time period, we had moved to Westchester. We were living in the city when I started that. And then we moved to Westchester, and the Picture House was looking for someone to manage the staff and the facility and to do a little bit of programming. And my realtor, who had sold us our house, her daughter worked there, and so they called me and said, "This is something you'd be interested in, knowing my background with the Middle East." And I said, "Sure, I love movies." And then it just turned into basically me working my way to the top, being programming director and choosing the movies. It was just fun and, you know, and setting up all the events and coming up with all the ideas.
And along the way, I mean, you certainly become sort of a fixture in the Pelham community as well, of being a co-president of the Pelham Chamber and creating a lot of events, especially going back to COVID.
Yeah.
I think you were sort of the founder of several different things locally in the community, right?
Yeah, we started, my partner who's here today, Amy Cole, and I, we started Wolf's Walk, which was a music festival and street fair. We founded the Farmers Market. She ended up taking that to another level after I backed out of it. Just bringing back, you know, community is so important. I mean, when I first started at William Morris in L.A., I lived with my uncle who lives in Laguna Beach. And when you move to L.A. and you think you're going to live with your uncle in Laguna Beach, but your office is in Beverly Hills, you don't realize that that's about a two and a half hour
that distance
drive.
Is a little bit further once you get out there and experience it, right?
So for 3 months, I was driving about 2.5 hours each way. And
oh my
I was
God.
Like, I'm always going to live as close as I can.
Yes.
So that's really been my, I don't like commuting, and I like to be in my community. And my kids are living there, so I want to give as much as I can to the community to make it as the best community as possible.
Do you find it hard sometimes to sort of change gears between Picture House Clay and just Clay, you know, being in the community?
I don't think that there's any difference anymore. I mean, I wish that there was. I mean, since I do have more, I don't know if you're going to get into that, but I do, you know, being at the Picture House, I'd walk by this bar every day on my way back and forth to work that's in between my house, and I knew the bar owners. And then about 8 or 9 years ago, they're like, "We're selling." And I called my friend. I said, "Do you want to buy a bar?"
Yeah.
and as you would. And so we bought the bar right around the corner and turned it into a Mexican food restaurant. I won Best of Westchester that year for Cantina Lobos. And it was a big success. It's hard to straddle both, but, you know, it's kind of the same idea. And I always say restaurants are like the new, like I used to book rock clubs, and you and I used to go to rock clubs, you know, back in our day. Now the rock clubs aren't there anymore.
Right, right.
But what is there is the experience from restaurants. And like,
sure.
I always kind of think chefs are now the new rock stars.
Yeah.
And the restaurants, small restaurants are the new rock venues. And
yeah,
we just like to go.
Point.
Go to experience, have a, you know, performance, and,
right.
You know, and so it's kind of the same thing. And it's the same kind of thing with the Picture House, you know, you want to go for an experience and see something and
it's all
you know,
about
make sure,
the experience.
Yeah,
right?
It's all about taking care of the guest and making sure that your product, food, movies. And I think that that's the hardest thing that we're finding right now is that And our most recent pivot of the Picture House and what we're going to become is like we're only as good as our content. And
right.
sadly, the movies aren't as good as they used to be, and nobody knows why. I mean, there's so many good movies, like Everything Everywhere All at Once from, you know, from your alumni at Emerson College.
Yeah.
I mean, that movie is incredible, and I hope that opens the, you know. And then this year, you know, we saw some of the best and most exciting Oscar competitions, you know, with Poor Things and Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer. I mean, there are some really, really solid movies, but they're still making the, and I know everybody loves the superhero Marvel movies, but the studios just don't seem to be listening. And so, you know, and I get it. We're not, the Picture House isn't a place that I would want to go to see a Marvel movie. It's just not the experience. And when you're talking about selling experiences, you know, we have a lot of retired people. We have a lot of young people who really are conscious of their dime because, you know, you have little kids that if you want to go out, now you have to have a babysitter. It has to be really something that you're want to see and invested in.
And you guys have an opportunity for seniors to actually show up for free, correct?
Yeah, on Tuesdays. Every Tuesday, formerly through Con Ed and Amy Pollan and a couple at Westchester, the Bronxville Community Foundation, we get a lot of grants, and that allows us to show movies for free on Tuesdays.
That's great.
At both locations.
Great.
And, you know, hundreds of seniors show up every Tuesday to see movies, but and it's all about that community.
Yeah,
thing,
building a community. They have a place to go, people to talk to, familiar faces. It's really nice.
Exactly, good quality film.
Anything else that's coming up at the Picture House? Special events or big plans on the horizon for you that you'd like to share?
We just had our big gala because we're a nonprofit, and so we still need to raise money.
Yes,
we
all know it well.
We're kind of breaking down. We have a great education program, which we're building up, and we're working on building out an education space in Bronxville and some extra storefront that we have. We did our first phase, and now we can have classes there and birthdays. That's one of our major sources of revenue is showing birthday movies to kids.
Right.
And then having meetings there and offering up to the community. So we're really working on solidifying ourselves in Bronxville community and letting people know, like, if they want to have events there, you know, if you want to show a movie and we had the Bronxville seniors came and showed some movies separately from what we did. You know, we have both places have beer and wine license, so we're really trying to figure out how we can expand on that and make it so that you could just come in for a beer and not even see a movie. So we're really trying to work on creating our own content, whether it be through education, whether it be through experiences that, that are readily available, or beer and wine, and hopefully some food soon.
So you guys could be a destination outside of the movies. You don't have to necessarily come in to see something. You can come in to hang out and have that nice experience that you mentioned.
That's what we're hoping for,
That sounds great.
And have it semi-themed, not overly themed, to the idea of going to the movies and just hanging out.
Well, it's been great talking with you today, Clay, and I'm sure this is the first of many conversations that we'll have here at our LMC studio on the Avenue. I do want to take a moment to thank Stefan Aloisa, who is our tech today, who's done a wonderful job. And, of course, a special thanks to LMC Media. You can visit us on the web at lmcmedia.org. This podcast was recorded in our studio on the Avenue, again, 243 Mamaroneck Avenue in Mamaroneck, New York, attached to Mamaroneck Cinemas. And you can also book this time. So if you are a local resident in Larchmont, Mamaroneck, you do have free access to the studio space. And for those outside of our community, you can certainly book the space at lmcmedia.org. So we want to thank Clay today for being here with us. It's always a pleasure.
Absolutely.
And thank you all for watching. I'm Matt Sullivan, and this is LMC Cast. We'll see you next time.